Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address. Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the China Shop, home of the Band of Traders podcast. I'm your host, Kyle, and joining me tonight, we have Vanta Trading's Baba Yaga, Avo Alpha's Flary, and nearly two-time M-Period champion, Bear Goes Long. How you guys doing today?
Good, man. Good.
Pretty good.
Great.
Shout out to anybody who's dedicated enough to listen to us live. Please feel free to make use of the chat, join in on the discussion. Our topic tonight promises to be a spicy one if Baba's group DM interactions there were any indication. Should be all about trade sizing and the factors that go into that. After that, we'll recap our week and the good, bad, and ugly. Maybe make some bold predictions if we got some time. Speaking of which, we'll check in on those after, of course, everyone gets a chance to plug and promote. Baba, what do you got for us?
Oh, man. I said it last week or 2 weeks ago, and I'll say it again. You should check out the Discord, if for no other reason than to hang out on Fridays.
Fridays are the Simple. Fun day.
Hang out on Fridays. Free Fridays. It's a good time.
When's our next Trade Pro one?
I need to set that up, I guess.
I almost hopped in there with you guys this morning just to victory lap that setup this morning on the open
long?
With you guys. Oh, my God, dude.
Yeah,
I saw you guys were all in there and you were streaming. I sent you the screenshots, but I was packing for the cabin, so I was like, I better get out of here and not push my luck on month end. But I almost hopped in. I'm due to hop in there with you guys.
Oh, yeah. Well, definitely got to get you back in there. Flair, what do you have going on, man?
I mean, not too much, nothing that I'm promoting, just enjoying trading. And, you know, I mean, the crew's all been doing well, and it's just, it's just been kind of fun. I'm not a big all-time high trader. Like, it just kind of messes with a lot of the modes of work that I look at normally. But, you know, been enjoying the rotations and the ranges that this, you know, whatever up, down is left, right has been causing. So I'll take it, you know, volatility is the friend. So that's about it. Shout out to NQ.
What's Bear Barrel up to? I passed by some really nice looking whiskey stores and I was thinking of them in Colorado.
Yeah, the boys are doing good over there and still pumping out content. And again, I still got to get on a tequila episode. I've yet to do that, but it's always good sampling when you go over to
tequila with some
sound guys.
Pickle juice.
Yep.
Bear, you got anything you want to shout out, promote?
I think really just thanks to Vanta Trading and absolutely Friday M Period Challenge. It's a lot of fun. Give it a shot.
Even when you don't win, it's still fun, right?
It is. Hey, I maxed an eval today. So
yeah, man. No, you. I think you made up for it.
Yeah.
All right. Show news. Schedule's still getting worked out. I just got back from a vacation, so there's not going to be a guest episode this coming Thursday, which just happens to be 4th of July. But there will be stuff coming out after that. Not quite sure what it's going to be yet, but we'll see what gets recorded and edited first. As far as the charts go, Uruguay and Slovenia still keeping us in the top charts on their countries. Australia also got a nice little push to get us up there, but we since dropped off. probably a good thing, because I think Phil Muscatello got pissed last time we charted in his country. let's see. Ireland, Romania, also slacking, guys. Slovenia doing their part, though. I don't know if you guys saw the review I posted in our group chat, but I'm going to butcher this name. Markori left us just one of the most amazing reviews I think I've ever seen. And we've also gotten a real special treat from Lucas in Sweden that I'm going to be putting in the mid-roll ad break here tonight. If anybody understands that, do what it says, and I'm going to hate it. If anybody else wants to do anything to rally their countrymen, send me clips or write a review or steal a phone and subscribe us on it. Send it to us at bandoftraiterspodcast@gmail.com or on Twitter @financialinept1. And please don't send us stolen phones. First country to chart us at number one in any category, we're going to do something special to commemorate that event. All right, checking in on the ongoing predictions. I think the only ones we really have that bear looking at is NQ below 18K till the election. Not happening yet. Baba, you were saying 17,716 before the election. That one's looking a little rough. Larry's shaking his head too.
you wanted then, bold, Kyle.
It's bold. It was bold. I thought mine was bold because we're trading pretty close to 18K when I made that. Let's see, what else do we got? Oh, Clitter. Did I just say Clitter? Cleo's Twitter passes us all by end of year.
Oh my god. We just got unmonetized. Oh my god.
Are we gonna leave that in? That's the real question. Her count is currently,
everybody pretend like that didn't happen.
Her count is currently at 34, it's still going up. So keep subscribing to her feed there. I want to see that one happen. All right, I think that gets through all the business end stuff. So, Flair, you want to kick us off and kind of introduce the topic, since this is your brainchild here?
Child, I guess, sure. You know, I mean, we were kicking around some ideas for today, and one of the things we wanted to talk about was just like bet sizing or trade sizing, whatever you want to call it. I think there's just a handful of like really, you know, there's some quanti ways to do it. There's just some feel ways to do it. There's day by day. And so just to really have like an open conversation about like, does anybody take an analytical approach? Do they just go with like gut feel? Is it based on setups? Like what kind of things are you doing to determine, you know, how many contracts you're going to trade? Are you going to trade minis? Are you going to trade micros? And does that, you know, change given, you know, X, Y, or Z? So really just to have a conversation around, you know, how much are we comfortable with putting on any particular setup or any particular trade, and you know what drives that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know Baba has an interesting approach with kind of like the feeler entry and then the add and the strength. I'm more of the I'm better off putting it all on at once kind of camp, and then size it based on the risk. So if it's 10 point risk and I want to take, you know, 40 points of risk total on any given trade, then it'll be four contracts. Bear, what about you, man? How do you approach that?
My approach was driven more by the limitations of using Topstep as a prop firm, and that they didn't scale micros. So
yes,
you know, you were kind of stuck of, you know, you were like trying to trade, you know, 1 to 5 micros, or you're just trading minis. And I really just worked my way through the hump into trading minis. And then with the Topstep X platform, you know, that kind of forced me down, and I brought myself down to smaller accounts and smaller, mm-hmm. much smaller risk limits. So that brought me down to the point of just trading one lot at a time. And so I've been spending this past several weeks really trying to work on, you know, okay, I get in there with the one, I've got a tight risk, and then when do I add and how do I add? And that's a really challenging learning process.
Yeah, the adding one is tough.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's huge.
I feel like I always ruin a great trade whenever I try to add. I've heard Flary talk yeah. about that too.
Yeah.
Know how to ruin a great trade with an ad. Trust right. me. Ask me how I know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I see ProShot and Chad here mentioning like probably one of the main ones, but it's a little difficult to do depending on like what you're scaling in or all in all out strategy is. But what he was mentioning is basing it on R.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think this is something that I did for a really long time. You know, really like as we're building up accounts and things like that. But let's just say you have a dollar risk, right? And a stop, right? So I want to lose at most $100 in this trade.
Mm-hmm.
NQ is trading, you know, $20 a point. So How do you make that work? Well, you can't. So, okay. Well, in theory, you can't unless you have a 5-point stop. God bless you if you do. So you would have to trade micros. You know, so like you're basically building this based around an R, and that R is a dollar amount. Typically, rel like some metric of like your account size. You know, I know a lot of people will do like, you know, they don't want to trade to be more than like 1-3% of their account or something like that. So like that's something that I did for a long time. But I think as you start to get into like multiple contracts or like scaling in, scaling out, sometimes that math can be, you know, relatively difficult to do. But I think it's also a really strong way to lean into setups that offer asymmetrical risk. So like the opening range no tick is a great example of that trade. So let's say like normally your risk is 15 points and you're willing to, you know, lose whatever it is, $600 on that trade or something like that. Well, if all of a sudden we have a no tick OR, which basically means like we're shooting up right out of the opening range, we've never traded below the opening range low, but we pull back and you have some stats based on that trend day holding. Well, if we get, say, within 7 points of the opening range low and you see something that you like for entry, well, now your risk is no longer 15 points. It's now 7 points. So do you dynamically size that in the moment? And I think that's kind of like the driver of a bunch of these R-related styles is how quickly can you adjust and how quickly can you think? Because let's just say normally you're a 2-lot trader, right? Or like that would be a 4-lot, $600, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're normally risking 15 points, $20 a point, you know, you could be in a 4-lot. But if all of a sudden your risk gets cut into half because of some certain setup or an asymmetrical opportunity that shows up, are you quick enough or do you jump into an 8-lot and still risk the same $600? But now you're in an 8-lot with an asymmetrical risk. And when it runs, kind of what do you do? So I guess I would like throw that back to you guys, because that's something that I look for, those asymmetrical opportunities all the time. And I find it difficult to, like, you know, get it perfect. Like I often find myself doing like napkin math, like really quick, like, okay, you know, this is, it's roughly going to be like 8 points. If we pull back, I'll put on an extra 50% or something like that. I won't necessarily double it or something like that. But that's something that I try to do when I see those opportunities a lot. And I think it can be a great way to have a setup that normally you'd be willing to give, say, 15 points or something like that, turn into, you know, a multiple R type trade.
Man, that's a good point. It is hard to do that math quickly. I know that I think when I find myself in that scenario, normally I'm trying to put my stop where it goes, seeing where it's at, and then knowing, okay, with 4 contracts, it's at this amount. I can comfortably take on 2 more contracts at this price and then work them in if I have time. Otherwise, you know, if you miss it, then whatever. What about you guys, Baba, Bear?
Yeah, I have floated around this a little bit back. So I think it's a fluid thing for me, to be honest. So there are times when I think the emotional side, or like the what's my stress level just generally, is going to affect the size that I trade. And that may be, you could call that like terrible or not terrible. I don't know. But I know for me, there's times when I feel strong. You know what I mean? Like I am in a good place, and my like emotional tank can handle, you know, a certain size stop or a certain amount of size in a trade and taking a stop, and it's not going to be a deal. Like it's not going to derail me or whatever. I also know that if I have been on a stretch that's been a little bit tougher, or, you know, or it's a certain day that I know typically my trading isn't as strong, then I'm going to handicap myself a little bit with the sizing, and almost regardless of the setup. Like to me, the keeping my mental space solid is my biggest, that's a bigger weapon than big contracts. So for me, I lean more into like the interpersonal side a little bit. Now there's times when those things both line up. Like I'm trading great. I've been trading well, I'm feeling confident, and I see this asymmetrical risk opportunity that while maybe I would trade, you know, let's say like a few weeks ago, trading 3-4 minis, right? Would be like a normal trade. and we had some setups in the overnight session that were just really easy for me to see and exploit. And so in the RTH session seemed to be a little more difficult for me to get positioned in. ETH was giving it out like candy. So there were like three nights or four nights where I was in trades that were three times the size of a normal trade. But the benefit of that ETH trade was, like you're talking about, Flary, I had a clear line in the sand. So I was able to add again, and continue to like keep the risk relatively in check for the amount of size that I had on, knowing that if this trade goes, like tomorrow I can do whatever, it doesn't matter. Right. If this trade doesn't go, it's not going to be a big deal. So I think it's like, for me, it's like a combination of how am I like mentally, how solid am I, how good am I at that day or during that season? And then what's the opportunity in front of me? Like today is a Friday. I usually trade them smaller. The setup was great. I took the trade with enough size that I could lose it two or three times getting positioned and still, you know, bang it out, because, you know, I felt like there was a pretty high possibility of us running at least 100 points on that. So I didn't need, and that's another thing, like I don't need, you know, eight contracts mm-hmm. on that. There's enough meat on that bone. I was actually so confident in that trade that I messed up and closed the whole thing out target two and then just put another contract right back on there. Like I didn't wait for it to pull back or anything. I just threw another one right back on, moved the stop all the way to the original entry, and then that, you know, got the rest of the trade off. So it's, you know, for me, there's some ebb and flow with it, man. I mean, like, and I just think I know that I have to be on guard and almost protective of my mental capital and like my mental state. And one thing that can really drag that down is sizing up at inopportune times mm-hmm. or, and then taking a few big kicks in the teeth or what feel like big kicks in the teeth. And then that just, that's just not fun. I mean, it's just not fun.
Well, you know? I like the one point you made there too about the overnight and being higher sized. I was going to ask you if volatility or just like the day type in general affects your position sizing too, because, you know, it seems it'd be like safer to get away with adding, you know, three times the size in overnight than it would be in, you know, 15 minutes after open.
Because it's moving like a snail.
Yeah, exactly.
Typically. Yeah. And today, we talked today a lot about where we were with regard to value and balance. And like, this really wasn't eventually there was a short setup, you know, way up there, wherever it was, I was done by then. On the flip side, like where we were when we were opening and what kind of unfolded there, you know, it just that I really felt like there was a pretty good chance of this thing just, mm-hmm. you know, kind of unwinding to the upside. And so I think the day type does affect that. Today was weird because I don't normally trade, much size at all on Fridays. At the same time, I really liked what was kind of happening. So it was kind of one of those, and I just opted to, you know, to not push it. I mean, I have quintessentially felt myself give in to being in a hurry, mm-hmm. being in a hurry to get somewhere, being in a hurry to make this certain amount, being in a hurry to eclipse this monthly goal, being in a hurry to eclipse this one quarter goal or this, oh, I want this quarter to be the biggest quarter ever or whatever that might be. And that can also really play to the negative. I mean, it can help you be real confident and bold, but it can also, for me, if I'm not careful, I can internalize that as pressure, added pressure that's not necessary.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I mean, essentially what you're saying, Bob, is like, it's this arbitrage between like emotional risk and like quantitative risk, right? Like,
exactly.
I think we all are capable of sitting down and sort of figuring out like, my account size is X and I should probably risk somewhere between here and here. And that's my, you know, that's your why. But then there's also like, you know, the kids were driving me fucking bonkers this morning and it's Friday and it's month end. And, you know, I probably like, I know that like, you know, again, like to talk different strategies, like I know that my Kelly bet size is supposed to be this, right? And that if I continually bet this size on this setup and I'm betting third Kelly or whatever, you know, like the quantitative side of things. Yeah, okay, but we're not robots, right? So I guess like that's part of the discussion as well, is like, how much do you arb that difference between like statistical Kelly, right? Or like, you know, some sort of mathematical bet sizing versus emotional bet sizing, right? Like, I'm comfortable in this range, which I'd be willing to bet that's what you have, right? Like, I think we all have that, right? Like, what's my min? What's my max? You know, maybe it's setup driven, maybe it's whatever, but it's just like some range. And then given how you feel that day, whether or not you think the setup is A plus or not, like sometimes you have to gut it up and like go for it. But, you know, like this morning, I think was probably a good example of that. But yeah, I agree with that. And I think that's like the driver of the conversation is like, it's easy to know the right thing or to like go and study like some of these quantitative ways to like size your bets or, you know, risk your capital. But then there's also like, okay, let's say Kelly tells you that, you know, on the setup that happened this morning, you're supposed to be in a 10 lot on Friday into month end, right? Like,
yeah.
Still execute, you know, like we're not robots, right? I mean, God bless mm-hmm. you if you have an automated system. You know, I've got some stuff that runs, but like, even watching an automated system trade the optimal bet size is difficult to do. You know, I mean, I work with a handful of people on like sort of developing some of these bots and stuff like that, or like deploying them. And one of the hardest parts is just watching, like we all have a saying, like just let the bot. It's super hard to do.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's even an emotional side to that where like you've gone in, you've determined like you have, you know, years or thousands of trades to run the stats on. You know what the equity curve is supposed to look like, you know, in theory, like you can run your Monte Carlos again, like all this quantitative stuff. But at the end of the day, even in an automated system, you got to sit there or don't, right, is probably the best thing to do. But you have to watch this thing automatically trade the size that you predetermined it was supposed to trade, or in some cases, dynamically size up as your account size grows or shrinks and things like that. So I think that's a huge piece of it is like, you also have to be comfortable with it, right? Just because you have some R answer, right, of how much you're supposed to bet, can you actually do it well at that size? So, like, there's that piece of it, too, that I think is really important. I don't know, Bear, what do you think? I know you have, like, an interesting angle, too, from, like, the prop side of things as well, that there's some caps and some limitations, and there's goals there, right? So
yep.
There's this, like, driver that, like, you want to get across the finish line, you want to get to that, you know, payout, you know, whatever ladder, whatever they call it. So there's some drivers from that perspective too, where it's like, and let's be honest, I think they'll incentivize you to size up, right? Yeah,
those
exactly.
are traps.
It's the gimme gotcha.
Going for the goal is that's a bad road to go down.
Mm-hmm.
If you start to think about, you know, oh, how do I make 3,000? How do I make 4,500 a day? That's going to put you in a position where you are massively oversized.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's no faster way to blow an account. You know, I really appreciate Baba starting with the emotional side, because that's really what drove a lot of my education of, you know, looking at these different risk levels. And, you know, when I'm in a trade, I'm mostly not looking at it in dollars. I'm looking at the risk in points. And what I've learned, you know, I cut my teeth doing 10 tick and Q scalp, scalping a Q with a 10 tick stop, which is as insane as it sounds, but I made it work for somehow.
Hopefully in Globex.
Both. But I opened that up quite a bit, and it really opened up my trading. I'm like, oh, okay. I was doing this on hard mode. There's no reason to. And what I've found through a lot of experimentation is that my comfortable stop point is about 8 points in NQ, 7 to 8 points. You know, I've done stuff with like 15, 20 point stops, and I just emotionally, I can't watch it move that far against me.
Hmm.
And so that, you know, that's my boundary. I don't do anything super sophisticated. In the accounts that I'm trading right now, my personal loss limit on the account, what I've found to be the most effective is about $450 a day. And that's just going back through a lot of failed evals and stuff and going, okay, on a day, if I hit the point where I've lost 450, my chances of ending the day green are about 2%. So I'm never going
to
let myself go down.
That's a great stat to have.
Yeah.
That's so funny that you say that, because I know what that number is for me.
Mm-hmm.
Where statistically, if I look at all my trading, if I am down below a certain threshold, it's just not coming back.
Yeah,
that day,
you're in the spiral.
I'm on the wrong side. I'm overly biased, or I've sized up way too much. And but I can look at, I've had so many days, I got so much data. I know, like, it's just not, I mean, it's just, that's it. Like, we're just done. Now, fortunately, like, I don't land in that area very often. I mean, single, you know, one hand, you know, number of times in the last, I don't know, bunch of months that I've been in that position where I was like, well, you know, that's it. We have hit the rock bottom. Bear, I think this is also, you make a great point. There's a difference between how much I can lose and how much I can lose that doesn't damage me. Mm-hmm. Like, that doesn't affect the way I come in the next day. Yep. Like, I can lose a lot more on paper and still trade the next day, but I can't effectively trade the next day. You know what I mean? And so the fact that you looked at, like, Top Step says it's whatever the account size is, say it's $1,500 or $2,000 that you can lose on a day, you know, but you know, really, I'm kind of getting fragile around $500.
Yep.
To have the discipline just to call it there, knowing that statistically it's a hard road back. That's like trading with longevity in mind, which part of, like, that's been a theme that I've been trying to, you know, just continually remind myself of. It's like, it doesn't really matter how much I can make this week or today. I want to know that, like, in 6 months, I'm still solvent and sane.
Bro, there's only two types of traders. Ones that trade the open tomorrow and ones that don't. That's it. There's only two types. You either trade the open tomorrow or you don't. And it's Friday, so whatever. Fuck you, but you get it. Bear, so a question for you on that day, because the daily, like, sort of, like, stop, but it's, like, a mental stop. But, you know, again, like Baba said, like, yeah, can you maybe afford to lose more? You can, but...
Oh, yeah.
I guess the interesting question would be, let's say you have this $450 that you're willing to allocate. How do you then decide to allocate that across either a sequence of trades? If you see a great A-plus setup, are you willing to allocate basically your day to something, you know, whether you're, you know, let's say this, the naughty word, dollar cost averaging, right? Whether you're dollar cost averaging, adding to a trade that could potentially come against you, or just, like, sizing up on a trade, you know, is there ever a version of just going in, you know, and putting that 450 on the line because you saw something you liked? How do you view that bucket that you've given yourself for the day?
It depends on where I'm at on the day. So going into the day, it's really simple math. The three stopout rule of, if I've taken three stopouts, I'm probably seeing the day wrong. Mm-hmm. And so I start the day and I say, you know what, my daily risk, my daily R is $450. Divide by $350. And hey, I'm trading NQ. That's 7.5 points. Okay. That's my comfort zone. So the math works in my favor on this one. Yeah, slippage, I might lose, you know, $500, worst case. The other side of that is that, you know, generally where I built this system was in the evals, where your max loss in the eval was $2,000. So 450 gave me 4.5 days that I could go backwards before I blew an account.
Yeah.
So you're even thinking about it, like, longer term, like,
yep.
Like, so the 450 is a bucket of a larger, you know, sort of number that you're really just kind of breaking down your bet size from a holistic number all the way down to a single trade.
Because, and again, this is gaming, this is designing myself around the prop firm's rules. So in that account, my maximum daily loss is 1,000 per the rules, and my maximum daily gain is 1,500. Well, if I set my personal loss at 450, that means that I can have three bad days in a row and I'm still live in the account, and I can have that fourth day can be a banger, and I'm back to even.
Yep.
It's
I've heard Baba talk about that before too. Like, a bad day shouldn't take you multiple days to recover from. If you can have one good day that recovers from two bad days, like, that's kind of where you want to be, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, how many people have said this? And you said it a minute ago, Flair, like, there's traders that trade tomorrow and traders that don't. Unless something crazy happens, like, none of this is going anywhere. Like, tomorrow, the market will still be there. The next day, and, like, I've said that before, and we've all said that, but, like, the reality of that, like, really, really trying to focus on the fact that, like, it really, really will.
Yeah.
And I will be left dealing with the damage or the fallout if I if I leave the reservation, like I gotta repair the damage, you know, not all in one day, but like,
but it's the question of do I want to rebuild the entire house or do I want to just sweep off the back porch?
Yeah. Like I think like one of the questions that I think I'm trying to think about more is like, what is it about today that makes me want to allocate more risk? So if there's not anything that's like, man, this is a random Tuesday, we had 8:30 news and it set up perfectly to some of the time stuff and sessions that I look at, that's a day that I would like to allocate more risk, especially if where we're trading in the bigger picture is somewhere I really want to be participating, then okay, great. There's a systematic and there's a structured and there's a historical and there's a statistical reason to maybe give this day a little more credence and maybe be a little busier, maybe stretch the targets a little, something like that.
So the strength of your setup plays into your position sizing too then?
I mean a little, but the point that I'm trying to make is most of those days that end up being like stop out, stop out, stop out, stop out, none of those things are present.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nothing special about that day that would even warrant giving it any more of a shot than any other normal day. And I think sometimes we flip those two. I found myself like trying to really lean in on some random, normal, completely like effectively lame day. That's like, what am I doing? Like, I'd rather save all this gas for like a Tuesday 8:30 news day when we're trading. We just traded below balance and we just came back into a 4-day balance. Now that is a day, and we have 8:30 news. Like, okay, I can do that. But a 10 a.m. news on a Friday, typically not my favorite, right? Or a 10 a.m. news on a Monday, like, God dang, 10 a.m. news all across the board. 10 a.m. news sucks for me. I don't like it, right? But you find yourself like fighting on a day like that. Right. When
dude, Michigan Friday Michigan news sucks. Yeah, I can't stand that.
That's your people,
who
bro.
Who cares about Michigan? Who cares about Michigan news? Whatever it is, consumer, it drives me nuts. Yeah. Yeah,
but you know, you get like sucker.
Nothing ruins a good trade like that 9 a.m. yeah, or 10 for you time. Yeah, yeah, it's so annoying.
I don't know. For me, I've had to set an alarm to make sure that I am out of a trade at those freaking noon treasury auctions.
Oh, yeah, noon.
I don't know
noon
how many times I've been in a great trade that just gets
I'm warm. A little bit more. I'm more okay with the noon treasury auctions. For us, it's 101 Eastern. Those typically can get things moving because a lot of those mornings can be a little bit static.
Right.
It's super important to be aware of them. The 8:30 Eastern news, a lot of times I really like to be at the desk prior to that. It really lines up well for me a lot of times with other work that I have going on. But I mean, the takeaway from all of that thing is that we'll end up unintentionally allocating more. We'll donate so much more unintentionally on a day that's stupid and then not be as aware on a day that's golden. And I think, you know, it's not saying, oh, well, if my normal risk is 1300, that's when I start to come unglued. Then today it's going to be 2600. Maybe it's if my risk is 1300 before I come unglued and this is an A++ day, then like when I see it, I'm really going to give it. I may take size that only allows me to have two stop losses, but that's fine because this day should really bring it. Whereas on a stupid day, with 10 a.m. Michigan, you know, Flaherty's people's news, it's like
I'm from Minnesota, man.
I mean, it's the same general area, bro. It's all up there, okay? And I'm way down here.
Okay? Yeah, I know. So, trust me, I know. We got the links, though.
Yeah, everybody listening can tell.
Longtime fans of the show should be familiar with the lender formerly known as Sue Pullen, and I'm pleased to announce that she's back, fresh off a rebrand and ready to help as Sue Mackey. Sue is a certified mortgage advisor at Fairway Independent Mortgage, an equal housing lender who focuses on finding the right product for you and your needs. She has over 20 years of experience helping thousands of homeowners. Whether it's purchasing, refinancing, or even a reverse mortgage, Sue will help. Sue's licensed in 36 states now, so reach out and let Sue Mackey it happen for you. The best way to reach her is just give her a call at 520-977-7904 or in an email, spullen@fairwaymc.com. Fairway Independent Mortgage has an MLS number of 2289. Sue Mackey has an MLS number of 206048. That email again, spullen@fairwaymc.com. And that phone number is 520-977-7904. Shoot Sue an email and let her know she needs to update that address.
But I mean, essentially what you're saying, though, is that there should be a criteria too, because we're talking about like bet sizing, and in theory, we've all sort of said that it's fluid, right? And there's some different factors, but there should also be criteria for when you're going to go for it, essentially too. And
man, I'm trying to not go for it, by the way. I have gone for it so many times. I know.
Bro, tell me about it.
I am trying to not go for anything.
I mean, that's why the topic is top of mind. I mean, I've been trying to size up since January and gotten, you know, basically my teeth kicked in just about every time, you know, and trying to do it more of like from a quantitative approach, like a statistical, like percentage of account. I actually think of it more from like a poker buy-in perspective. You know, like that, like you're saying, though, like there should be a criteria to this. You should have a plan. It shouldn't just be like, oh, this is a 10 lotter. Like, I'm ready, because you're probably not. And even when you sit down and you plan it out, like I think it was Pro again that was saying it in chat, like you have to be emotionally ready. And there's no really way to know until you get in there and see like, okay, I could do this on, you know, I like 6 lot because it just scales easily, but like I can do this on a 6. Can I do it on a 12? And you find out real quick whether or not you can or can't.
Doubling is,
you know, or whatever. Yeah. Well, I mean, not necessarily doubling, but like just quickly, like the way that I look at it is, you know, in poker, we do buy-ins, right? So let's say you're playing the 10-20 mixed game. Typically a buy-in at that game is going to be $500. Well, if you want to play that game and have some survivorship in that game, you should really have somewhere between like 50 and 100 buy-ins in that game. Otherwise, you know, variance, right? Statistical anomalies, drawdown starts to become a factor. So I think about my trades in the same way. I want to have, for the size that I'm willing to trade, I want to have basically 50 to 100, which really becomes like a percent of your account, right? I want to have 50 to 100, somewhere in that neighborhood.
1% to 2%.
Of those bets that I'm, 1% to 2% that I'm able to do. And I won't size up, or I will size up once I grow my account to the next bet size that I want to make, or the next risk tier that I want to jump into, until I have 50 or 100 bets. But in that journey of going from 50 bets, like 50 is really where I sit. So I you know, I'm comfortable at 2% risk with the stats I have on some of my setups. But when I'm on that journey from getting to 50 bets at this size to 50 bets at this size, there's streaks, right? And there's opportunities. So like, you know, you see certain day types, or let's say you've had a really good week, or whatever it is that, like, again, you feel like you're ready to take a shot. Just like in poker, you know, you've had a good week playing the 10-20 mix, and there's the 20-40 mix sitting right over there. Well, sometimes you run up a stack in the 10-20 game, you had a $500 buy-in, now you got $2,000 sitting in front of you. Well, hey, that's a buy-in over at the the 20-40 game. So you take your stack, you go sit down, and the game is harder, right? Like there's different, you know, things that are going to get thrown at you. There's different emotions. You're getting check raised. You're in spots you didn't, you know, you weren't comfortable with or familiar with before. And trading is very much the same way. But like, you know, sometimes you can grab that stack that you've ran up, whether it's at the end of the day, whether it's going into the next day, and you just take a shot, right? But it has to be calculated. And this kind of circles back to what you were saying, Bob, is like, there's criteria to it. Like, okay, I'm at 75 units at the bet size that I'm at. I'm going to take a shot every time I get roughly into the 75 units when I see a setup that I really enjoy. And that might be a 50% increase in size. It might be a 100% increase in size. But the point should be that there's a criteria to it, that you're comfortable. And then again, like you were saying, Baba, it's not going to kill you, right? Like, yeah, okay, normally, you know, you're comfortable, like we'll just use the $600 example. We're comfortable losing $600 on this trade. Well, I'm going to try to lose, you know, or not try to, but I'm going to try to double that on this trade the next time I see it. And I'm going to allocate $1,200 with the risk, whatever that contract size is, to this trade. And it's systematic in the sense that, like, I know I'm counting my bet size. I know this trade won't kill me, but
the next part is like tying back to that emotional piece is, okay, so I did it, right? Now I'm playing 2040. I'm in 12 lots. What did you do? Did you punt your stack off? Did you start playing hands outside of your range? Did you add to your losing trade? Or did you come and bring your A game? And I think that's the big piece. And again, like what Pro was saying is like, can you actually do it too is a whole nother piece, which, you know, I think it's like, it's interesting because in my mind, this conversation when we were going to have it was going to be like really analytically based. And it seems like the consensus is a lot of us think about this from more of like an emotional, like we have some base of like, we're comfortable with this risk from, you know, a couple of different like metrics. But at the end of the day, like we're sort of like going here to figure out whether or not we're going to deploy what we're comfortable with or what we've allocated, which is kind of interesting, right? Like it all does sort of come back to a little bit of an emotional sort of metric. Right, wrong, or indifferent, right? I'm sure there's some quants like rolling over in their grave because we're not all saying to bet, you know, to bet
the same every time. It should be the same
every time, right? Because in theory, you should, right? Like in theory, if you have a setup that you have great stats on, like you know exactly how much you're supposed to bet. There's literally a formula for it. They like took down Vegas doing exactly that with like a 1% edge. You know, so in theory, we should be doing that. But the reality is, can we do it? Yeah. Can we be robotic enough to do that? And does that give us the longevity to then be here tomorrow? And I think for most of us, that answer is probably no. And maybe that's what takes you from, you know, good to elite to, you know, whatever. It's still a cool conversation because I think everyone sort of like guards this thing. You know, they don't want to say I trade one, I trade six, I trade micros, I trade minis. When really I feel like if we sort of like at least discussed it a little bit more versus like having to like, you know, oh, I ran a Kelly criteria thing and, you know, my Monte Carlo says that I asked
ChatGPT.
I've got zero risk of ruin. Right. Exactly. Right. So anyways, I digress.
If people aren't giving you good answers or when you're trying to have this discussion with them, it's probably because they actually need to spend a little more time thinking about it. I know I do. As the point you're making, like we're not robots. We're not going to trade perfectly every single day. And that maybe there needs to be a lot more awareness on your mental state coming into the day. Like, am I operating at peak performance? Do I feel like betting on myself today or do I feel like hedging a little bit?
And Purdue has a little bit of an approach to that, that him and I talked about that I've been incorporating. Fleury, you were asking earlier about, you know, how do you know when to scale up? When do you scale up? And it's a little bit emotional, but it's also what I've been working with is it's just, where am I at on the day?
Mm-hmm.
So am I, you know, have I got over my hurdle for the day? You know, TopStep has the $200 to count for a payout. So am I over my $200? Am I over my daily R? Now I feel like I've got a little bit more room to run. And if I'm trading well, that's where I'm sitting here going, you know what? I'm in a solid trade. This thing's moving. I've got room. Sure. I'll scale up. I'll add another contract to this trade. Now I'll bring my stop up to keep my risk relatively small.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll try to keep my risk at that -150 or, you know, if it's running, I'll just bring it up to break even and go, okay, you know, I'm going to the moon or I'd scratch it. And that's a little bit of an interesting approach. That's a little different.
I think the discipline piece of adding is pretty huge. And I think I've like asked myself the question at times when I'm toying with the idea of adding into something, like, okay, so for example, some of those Globex trades started as two lots. And that's like not a big deal trade. I mean, that's small. I would say that's relatively small, generally speaking. Then I was like, man, this is actually really setting up well. Then it's like, okay, am I going to cut the legs out from under this trade if I add here? Because then I'm going to have to mitigate this, you know, stop a little bit too much. So finding like what qualifies like that second stage of a move. So you get like the, you know, your entry in that initial, you know, initial move in your direction, and then further qualifying that with like, what do you want to see to you know, fuel the next leg, and like having I've talked about like high standards for the market, like holding the market to that standard. Like if this thing is going to make second run leg or a second leg run, I don't want to see it below whatever price, below this market structure, below this, whatever you're using for entries and structure and all of that. And then if I'm in a place where I'm like, I can honor my commitment to myself to not move a stop, to not do anything stupid, then I can add into it. And so that trade went from 2 to 4 to 8 to 15.
Jeez.
But it was okay. Yeah. Like, it was fine. And I also having that many contracts, like, that second leg doesn't have to really do that much for that to be right. very profitable and to be an outsized return. And then I can scale it back down, which I did. Like, I think we looked at the screenshot of that sequence that week, those three different times that happened in the room at different times, just talking about like that the overall move was only like 45 or 55 points that I participated in, but I did it balls to the wall, but I also did it very responsibly. So I think if scaling up on that initial entry is hard for somebody, if you have trades that usually have kind of like two or three legs to them, if you don't want to put on, say you're trading two, or let's say you're trading five micros and you don't want to put on 15 micros right off the rip because that's scary and you don't want to take that big of a stop loss. If you have, you know, a 10 point stop loss is like $300 or something like that on 15, but you get five on and then you get a chance to add five more and then you just keep the discipline on that stop. And then you can get five more on. And sure, sometimes it'll come right back and stop you out of break even and you made nothing on the trade. That's where having some stats on kind of what the expectancy is of your moves and stuff like that. But I think that is a way I've found in this new stage of trading life to comfortably get into a little more size without risking like hurting myself on the front end. Because a lot of times most of us are entering, you know, in sharp edges of the market or what we're anticipating to be a sharp edge. Even if that's a pullback, you still are having to make a decision on where is the terminus of this pullback for me to then join on the right side of the V. No matter what, you're having to make a call, right?
Yep.
And so you make that first call, and then if you have an immediate qualifier that gives you the freedom to add a little bit more size, that can be a kind of, I would say, an appropriate self-protective way to add, you know. And I don't want to sound like a tool bag. Like, let me just be clear that my trade size varies so much, it's not even funny. I have been in that size trade like three times, four times this entire, since in 2024. And there are days where I trade like five micros. And there are days where I'm trading 25 micros. And there's days when I'm trading three minis or five mini. Like it does really vary a lot for me personally. Mm-hmm. And I know that probably throws the stats people into a hissy and also probably at times hurts me. But the help that I get from that is that when I need a little rest, like a little, I just need an easy win. I need something that feels good. Like right. I can do that. And tomorrow mm-hmm. the market will be here.
All right. Well, it looks like lights are going out on Flurry there. So we probably need to move on and do some good, bad, and ugly.
Oh, I had to move away from the lake. Hey, the bugs
were I saw bad. You swatting some mosquitoes there.
Yeah. real quick before we hop in to the good, bad, and ugly, I just want to say, like, so Baba, what you're talking about too, like, I know, you know, to some extent, yeah, it's talking about like your entry style or whatever, but like essentially it's tiered risk, right?
Yeah.
So it is a version of bet sizing. You know, I mean, I think a lot of the like mid cap guys call it pyramiding or whatever, but two things with that. One, when you put on that feeler and you let the trade go in your favor and you get to a place where the market breaks, like you said, you hold it to a high standard. You go, okay, like today, the short was a perfect example of that. One, we had a nice cushion because we had that beautiful move up with the setup that you and I were both in. And then, you know, things just ripping. We can fire a few shots short. And then when they made that upper distribution, I said, if they get below this lower distribution, I just put on a tiny little feeler, right? Little feeler. And I said, if they break this distribution, I am adding. And I actually added the nut low and it came almost all the way back, but I still did it, right? Mm-hmm. Like I added down there and then they broke it. I added again. And then they got through the cave and they were holding that lower distribution. I added again. And then I said, okay, here we go. Like below the open, I'm just holding, mm-hmm. just holding.
Yep.
And you scale a little bit of it out across the way. But again, that like tiered idea is sort of like a version of that risk management or bet size, because you're starting at a comfortable level. And I think that's another interesting thing, like, especially like bear in the eval environment too. Like, you know, you get these bigger accounts, or let's just say you have a big account, right? Like you have more capital than you need to trade. If I said gun to head, make $200 tomorrow, and I gave you a $300,000 account to do it, would you do it on a 30 lot mini, or would you sit there and just rip like levels on like a few micros and scale in and build tiers into risk? And how easy of a time would you likely have to do? Like gun to head, you'd be like, dude, no problem. You're giving me $300K, and all I have to do is make $200.
100%.
Right? Like. So,
mm-hmm. so that's I'm saying like that, look at the salary over the year, or look at your stats on the quarter. Like for me, it's just glaringly obvious that like it's way easier to do that than to make like than to make $4,000 or $5,000 in a day, because the bad days hurt too much. Mm-hmm. I mean, like just to be honest, like that and the stability piece, like, it's just not worth it to me right now, unless it's super, super great, ideal, perfect, whatever, whatever. It's just not worth it.
That makes sense.
And your question is actually a perfect lead in into the good, bad, and the ugly. Because I built this approach using the eval, and I built it around the eval rules, but I've graduated out of that. And, you know, I've gone from trading evals to trading one funded account to three funded accounts to five funded accounts, and, you know, dealing with that emotional roller coaster of, oh crap, this is actually real money. So yeah, it's yeah.
Before we jump into good, bad, and ugly though, I do want to play this clip for Lucas sent us, a call to action for all Swedes. So
hallå hallå till alla mina svenska vänner. Ert stöd har visats i siffrorna, men nu behöver vi er hjälp. Så minst 12 stycken till. Kanske till och med dubbelt så mycket för att nå första plats. Så säg till era vänner att prenumerera på Band of Traders. För att om vi når första plats så lovar jag att jag käkar surströmming.
Awesome.
All right, I'll translate. I'm almost sure that he said, when figuring out a bet size or how many contracts to trade, trade roughly 50% of your account on any given trade and you'll be fine. I'm almost sure that's
correct.
You might want to write your Google Translate, but I don't know. I'm not sure.
That was not quite, but it did say that I'd probably be eating something pretty nasty if we chart number one in Sweden. Wow. All right, let's do some good, bad, and ugly, and we'll get this show on the road here. Anybody in particular want to go first?
I'll fire off and then probably cut out here because the bugs are getting super bad. But
all right.
I'll just say good was just a good end to the week. The trade this morning, again, you know, we talked about it a few times, but something I've really been working on and leaning into, and saw it today. And you know, it's just a cool opportunity with the liquidation from the low. So just like good in the sense of been putting in a lot of work to sort of like bring this last little piece of what I'll call my process together. From both statistic and just execution, entry, like all of these things, bet sizing. And today was a good culmination of that. And, you know, I would say the bad was just, you know, still having those like size up, like again, into this bet sizing, like throughout the week, like, you know, every time I try to take this shot, just like kicked right back. So I had a couple of those this week where, you know, like Baba, like you were saying, the decision-making process of when I chose to allocate those was maybe driven more from I want this place versus I'm ready for this place. So, you know, again, like good dovetail into this conversation. And I would say the ugly, really, I don't have anything that's like super.
Don't have to have an ugly.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything that like, I'm just like really like ashamed of, like really this has, you know, this hasn't really been going great or whatever, but you know, I've just seen, I'll say this, I've seen a lot of people in this all-time high environment and the expanded price, which is something we didn't really get into, of like we're trading at 20K NQ now, mm-hmm. and you were sizing, you know, six contracts at 12K, 14K. Are you still sizing six contracts when we're at 20, 30% higher, 40% higher? But the point here is, you know, I've seen a lot of people struggling in this area, not only in like the prop space with all the weird shit that's going on with Apex and all this stuff, but like just in general of trying to like get acclimated to the auction up in this area. So yeah, I mean, myself personally too, like this area sort of like drives me bonkers being up here when there's no resistance one day, or, you know, they clear out all the support and we're just kind of like building these like, you know, chop balances all over the place. So I guess my ugly would just be like this general auction, this all time high auction is just an area of struggle for me. And I think probably a handful of people that I know very well. I'll leave it at that.
Flair, I want to dig around and see if I can find this book. There's a book I had that I remember it talking a lot about like gulp limits when it talked about like moving up to a new game. I wonder if maybe that might be something that's beneficial, especially if you're already thinking in terms of poker.
I'd love to take a look. Please send it my way.
See if I can dig it up. Pretty sure I unpacked those not too long ago. Baba, you want to go?
Sure. We'll go.
And Flay, if you need to jump off, we won't feel bad.
Yeah, we still love you. Yeah.
I'll listen in on mute.
All right.
Nice. So let's see. Good would be my just this is a timely conversation because I had a really good another fantastic conversation with my wife last week.
Love that.
Just talking about trading and all of this stuff, and one of the things that she said was like how disconnected I can be from dollar amounts on the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And how in reality, like, not in a mean or like pressured way, but like the swings don't need to be as big as they are because we don't need the big upswings.
Right.
If we size things back a little bit, then the low is not nearly as low because I don't get nearly as frustrated or tilted. And then the highs can maybe not quite as high, but definitely you can still do a lot of really good work with smaller size. And just like in a kind of accepting way of going, let's reel it in just a little bit and just enjoy a season with a little less stress. Because we're coming out of like, you know, the first part of the year being kind of like a roller coaster for me. And then like things kind of planed off and then kind of turned up. And we had this kind of, you know, good stretch. And it's like, okay, what is enough, you know? And not right. Trying to be like weird about it, but like you said, Flair, like it's, you know, making that. Let's just call it a range, $300 to $600, which is not a lot. I get that. Like, I'm not going to post Twitter, you know, Lambo pictures or whatever, but dude, that's so easy. Like, it's so easy and it's so comfortable. And like, you know, I don't know. I mean, like, I'm not saying that it's like a finish line or anything like that. It's definitely taken a few steps back in the one hand, but I don't know. Like, just that conversation of her just being like, you know, it doesn't have to be like ball out stuff every day. I don't know. It was good. And so,
dude, that's awesome. Just keeping her involved. I mean, like,
yeah,
there's so much benefit to just communicating with your partner about what you're trying to do or accomplish and making sure you guys are on the same page.
Yeah. Yeah. So that with that being said, we kind of have a rough target, a range that we'd like to be in each day. That's still more than we need, but it's just cool. And so we've just been, we call it the joke is it's like the pay your rent plan. We don't actually right. have rent to pay because like we live in a house and whatever, but, or we own a house, but like, it's not flashy, it's not sexy, but it gets the job done. And so that's been like every day since last, I don't know, like whatever.
Like condition rounders.
That conversation. Yeah. It's just been awesome. Like, check every day. Coming home. I don't go anywhere to trade. I just sit down at this desk, but you know, finishing and having like, and just having a conversation like, here's where we are. This is the day. And just having little celebration, like little wins every day feels good. Instead of like not talking about it that much.
Mm-hmm.
That's the good. The bad is that I've got those Top Step accounts that I've just farted around with forever and they're just sitting there.
The 450s?
Yeah. And they, and like, I just need to finish those. I forget about mm-hmm. them for weeks at a time and then I'll trade them for like 2 days and then I'll get bored with it. So I'll just,
yeah,
put
they cost $5 a month. Who cares?
I'll put 5 contracts on and then I'll just set the stop and then the stop. And it's like, it'll either make 1500 or lose 1000. Not advice. But also, like, they can be used as a they can be used as a tool. Like, they can definitely be used as a little tool, little drops in the bucket. So the bad is that I've just farted around with those and haven't done anything. The ugly, this is not trading related. But on the way to our, we took a trip this past weekend into the, in half of this week, we were gone with the kids to a water park. And on the way to the water park, I had one of my kids, I think, got a little car sick and also wasn't feeling well. Vomit all in the car, seat.
Explosive.
In the middle of nowhere, we had to pull over and try to manage all that. It was ugly.
I bet that car smelled amazing too.
It was tough. My wife is a miracle worker with that kind of thing, though. To be honest, it wasn't bad when she was done. Yeah. So that's a good, bad, and ugly.
Well, it sounds like quite the gamut you ran. Barry, I know you had some pretty good.
It's been really interesting week. And actually the bad is a little bit different, because after I locked my accounts this morning and kind of sat down and wanted to look through and analyze, you know, kind of what I did today, I looked down at my notebook and it was blank. And I realized I didn't do any of my prep, because I walked into the computer and I started trading the news, and I never actually sat down and mapped out my levels. I only got like 4.5 hours of sleep last night. And basically, like, today was a 3-strike day. I should not have been trading. I didn't sleep well. I had insomnia. I didn't do my prep. And I didn't write down any of my trades. And the fact that I actually did really well today, that's bad. I rewarded, my bad behavior got rewarded. And so, I want to look at that and, you know, just kind of use that as a call for action, you know, for myself. The ugly needs a little bit of a lead in. Over the past, you know, I've been trading a funded account for, gosh, about a month now, and a lot of kind of seesaw up and down as I, you know, work through some of those emotional issues. And it really just kind of got on a roll the last 2 weeks. And I was trading the funded account and then multiple evals linked together. So all of a sudden these started snowballing, you know, so I was trading 2 funded accounts on Friday, Friday I passed another one. So Monday I'm trading 3 funded accounts, and then Monday I passed 2 more. So all of a sudden I have 5 funded accounts, and I kind of set a couple of those aside. I'm like, okay, I'm not going from, you know, a Yugo to a Ferrari in one day. Let's scale this up. Let's scale this up a little bit more slowly than that. And I came into Wednesday, I was trading 3 funded accounts together, had a really nice day, and I'm like, cool, lock those up, and then hopped into one of my other funded accounts and kind of farted around, and, you know, I was chasing, and I hit my daily loss. I'm like, yeah, okay, cool, that's why it's there. And it's a small enough amount of money that I can look at it and go, oh, okay, 450, oh, well.
Yeah.
And then I came back in Power Hour in my 5th funded account and just took it to the moon. I ended up like up 5R, and I'm like, wow, cool. So then Thursday rolls in and I'm trading 4 accounts late, and I was just on a roll, just hitting trades. And I hit some point, I stop for some reason, I look up and I'm at 4R on the day. And I'm like, wow, That's pretty cool. Well, you know, that's less than my record. That, you know, that's less than I did yesterday. You know, yesterday I did 5R on that one account. And then it hit me. I'm like, I'm at 4R times 4 accounts. That 2 days is 5 figures. Holy crap. What did I do? And so I stepped back and I had like the reasonable reflex that said, you know what? Lock your accounts, shut it away, and just come back. Because once you lock those accounts and you lock in those gains, you're now limited by that $450 loss limit. And somewhere in my head, I even heard, you know, nobody can take this away from me. And then the evil voice in the back said, except me.
I can.
I kept trading, because now I had this, well, if I hit my personal best on a day in a funded account times 4, wow, that'd be really cool. Yeah. And you can kind of guess where that ended. the day actually ended with all four of those accounts down at the loss limit, you know, my 450 limit. And, you know, I kind of walked away and I, you know, I went for a long walk that evening and in a lot of conversations in my head and kind of going, wow, you know, why did I do that? And, you know, my goal that day was just to make 450. Right. And I had several opportunities to stop above that goal. And I didn't. I was in the death spiral and I couldn't drag myself away from the computer long enough to reset. So that was my ugly.
I tell you what's awesome about that, though, is that you did keep that 450 loss limit in place, because that could have easily been the kind of day where you blow every single account you own.
Yeah, I could have gone in and turned off that loss limit. Ask me how I know. Mm-hmm. and I did. And what really Friday, what really, so then my good was I was actually still able to sit down at the computer this morning and bring a fresh start, bring a clear day to it. And I actually stacked them all together. So I was trading the five accounts linked as one. And I just was hitting trades. And I look up and I'm like, I'm at 3R for the day. Wow. Across five accounts, that's the same amount I was up yesterday. You know what? I think that's like an emotional point for me where my brain just... Because, you know, the day before Thursday, I was like celebrating. I was doing the dance. I was going, you know, I was getting ready to like, hey, I'm Superman. You know, oh man, I'm going to be on the Top Step broadcast tomorrow for our leaderboard. And, you know, all this stupid crap, totally stupid crap. And so when I hit that dollar amount today, I'm like, you know what? Shut it off. And I locked it up. Because we had talked about it before the day started that, you know, if I hit that, lock it up. And I did. And it felt so good. And I'm like, cool. And then I went and traded evals. You know, I traded one eval. Oh, I hit the 450. Oh, well. And then the last eval I saved for M period challenge. And I maxed it out. I hit the $3,000 goal. So cool.
God damn, dude. That's freaking awesome, man. That's why those loss limits are there, right?
and that's been such a huge key the last 2 months when I started tightening down those loss limits and using that Top Step feature where it's like, if you hit it, it locks you out and you're done.
I need to set mine up then, because I've been using like 250 as like my stop point. If I get above 250 loss, then I just switch to another account. But making that to where I can't go past it, because I've ignored it a few times.
Yeah.
Let's see. Okay. Let me do my, so I got a couple goods that I wanted to bring up. First one, June has been our best month in terms of downloads for the podcast, which is awesome. Just freaking incredible. It's been a lot of changes and we're actually hit that number, doing less episodes than we were doing back during that time. So the numbers are even better. If you think about it in a per episode, situation. The other one, and I'm kind of afraid to say this because I'm afraid to put it out there because now I have to keep doing it, but I might have accidentally quit smoking on this vacation that I went on.
Congratulations,
man. I was planning on bringing a pack with me just to have one, but I wasn't planning on smoking a whole lot anyway, but I forgot the pack and so didn't. I had opportunities to go pick one up, but you know, I thought, you know, it's a new environment. It's a chance to get outside of the other habits. Maybe we'll see how this goes. So yeah, I actually haven't smoked since, I want to say when I left on last week on Friday. So it's been about a week now.
That's awesome. That was the hardest thing. That was so hard.
And I also had a pretty decent day trading today too, if I'm going to be honest. Bad was I took one outsized loss on NQ out of the open. I don't know what I was thinking on that moment, but that one trade I think ruined what would have been like just a really good trading day. And then I had a similar situation as you, Bear. When I was done trading for the day and I went and started typing up my journal and my notes and reviewing my trades, I noticed that I hadn't made a single observation on the chart like I had been doing during that observation period before I had gone on vacation. I think part of it was because I didn't renew my Sierra Charts data feed, so I didn't have my normal chart to do those observations on, but that's still on me. And I was kind of disappointed with myself with how easy it was to not do that, to fall back into those old habits. So going forward for next week, that's going to be like my big focus is making sure that I'm still doing those observations. I feel like I'm much more in tune with what's happening and it keeps the, What is Andrew calls it his Wreck-It Ralph. It's my Rambo. It keeps that person from from taking control and trying to burn the whole place to the ground.
Kill them all. Let God sort it out.
Exactly. I think we made an episode, fellas. Unless anybody else has anything they want to end on here.
Shout out to 205 point rotations on the open.
Thank you. God, yeah. Oh, beautiful. Right.
When you beautiful. Close a 100-point runner on a Friday and it runs 100 more points.
Right.
Yeah.
And that wasn't even the trade of the day.
All right, folks. So I think that's going to do it for today's episode. I got to say thank you to Flary, Bear Goes Long, and Baba Yaga for joining us tonight. Everyone listening who stuck around to the end. Remember, you can show our panelists some love. Click on those links in the show notes. Visit vantatrading.com so you can join Baba Yaga and Mr. Banks every morning. Visit bandatraders.com where you can browse our huge catalog by guests, or you can check out the great deals and discounts we've collected over the years. Be back soon with another exciting episode, hopefully more impressive than Connor McDavid winning the Conn Smythe. But until then, rate, share, subscribe, blah, 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 and have a great week. This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only, does not constitute financial or investment advice, and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations. Produced by China Shop Productions.